And welcome to Jazz Vignettes from the Hall. I am Fawn Fritzen. In this special series, music enthusiast Steve Gedrose explores the world of jazz from its roots to the present day. He breaks the fascinating, ever-evolving genre of jazz into easily digestible themes, backed up, of course, with plenty of music examples. In each episode, Steve will introduce you to the musicians who were or are some of the key driving forces behind the evolution of jazz music. We recorded Steve's presentations live at the beautiful old Fire Hall in downtown Whitehorse, Yukon. Annually, between October and April, Jazz Yukon presents the Jazz in the Hall series, 5 concerts featuring local jazz groups. Each event is opened with a presentation by Steve, where he provides some background about the live music performed that evening. In this episode, Steve talks about gypsy jazz. He discusses the influence of a style of jazz that began across the Atlantic Ocean in France in the 1930s. We'll hear the music of one of its main architects, the Quintet du Hot Club de France, featuring gypsy guitarist Jean Django Reinhardt and French violinist Stéphane Grappelli. We will also hear music recorded by Borelli Legren and the Rosenberg Trio. Here is jazz whiz Steve Gedrose.
Thanks, Ray, very much. I'd just like to give a little overview of gypsy jazz. Trio Manouche is going to treat us to some of this music, so it seemed in keeping with that to talk a little bit about the history of this music. It's a style of jazz that was originated in France during the 1930s. It's also known by as gypsy swing, jazz manouche, or manouche jazz, so you can kind of see where Renaud got the name for his group. Gypsy jazz guitarist Django Reinhardt is credited with creating this style of music. He was born in 1910 in Belgium and died at age 43 in 1953 in Fontainebleau, France. I will say to all the francophones, please forgive my poor pronunciation of French, but that's the way it is. I'm totally Anglo, so there we go. I'll get that out of the way right up front. At the age of 18, Django was injured in a fire that burned the caravan that he and his wife were living in. He suffered first and second degree burns over half of his body. His right leg was paralyzed. The third and fourth fingers of his left hand were very badly damaged. If you've ever seen photos of Django, they often show his kind of contorted hand. He had 2 fingers on his left hand that he could use to play individual notes, and then he had to work at finding chord shapes that he could play with his third and fourth finger that were pretty well disfigured. He was a musician prior to the accident. He played banjo, violin, and guitar, but had to relearn, of course, because now he had this impediment of a hand that wasn't working properly. But as we'll hear, he totally did. He was inspired. He loved music. His gypsy people, music was a huge part of their life. But he got amazing facility with that impediment. During the 30s, the most popular music in France was called musette. This is a dance music that incorporates waltz and tango rhythms. After hearing jazz from the United States, particularly our friend Louis Armstrong and Mr. Duke Ellington, Django was inspired to add his gypsy flavor plus this swing articulation from jazz to expand the style of musette music. I think this is true throughout the history of music, that the young guys come along, they take what is already there and then expand it, combine other styles, sometimes create innovative and new music, and that's exactly what Django did in this instance. In 1934, he formed his famous Quintet du Hot Club de France with the violinist Stéphane Grappelli. This was a huge thing for jazz in general, and particularly for European jazz. The group's instrumentation was kind of different, too. It was quite different than the manouche ensembles, which often had an accordion, a violin perhaps clarinet and instruments like that. The gypsy jazz bunch put together 2 rhythm guitars, and in Django's particular case, his brother Joseph was one of the rhythm guitarists who played with him for many, many years. They also had an acoustic bass, and then the 2 solo instruments were Django on guitar and Stéphane Grappelli on violin, which you'll hear some examples of later. The rhythm guitar players in the group used a strumming technique called le pompe, or the pump to propel the music forward. These bands did not have a drummer, so it required the rhythm guitarist to really drive the rhythm and add the swing feel to this music. It's the pump that provides the swing and groove that we hear in which is actually the core of this music called Gypsy Jazz. It's a similar feel to the boom chick that we hear in bluegrass music. So I'm sure you'll recognize it having, once we play some examples tonight. For most of Django's career, he favored guitars that were made by the Selmer McAferry outfit. These were designed by Mario McAferry and built by the Selmer Company from 1932 to 52. It's very similar to the instrument Gord has here. There's two different sound holes in these guitars. One is a larger D-shaped sound hole called Grand Bouche. What else? This one is the oval sound hole, Petite Bouche. They have quite different sounds. The Grand Bouche was often used for the lead instrument. The other ones were often rhythm guitar. But that's changed. It's not cast in stone. They just have a slightly different sound. And combined, they just sound amazing. The original design was so that they could put a little resonator inside the guitar box to amplify the sound of the instrument. These were problematic. They were buzzing. They were problems with them. So they essentially took that resonator out of the guitar, but the sound holes remained the same. This is the classic sound for gypsy jazz to play on those particular instruments. Generally, they were doing some American standards, but in the gypsy jazz style. And of course, Django was writing a lot of material. He wrote many tunes through his career. And after their initial recordings in 1934, this music was spread far and wide through their touring through Europe. During World War II, they went to England to play for a time. And while back in Paris, I'm kind of skipping ahead a bit, they would play with visiting American musicians and expatriate U.S. musicians, such as tenor great Coleman Hawkins. They played with multi-instrumentalist and arranger Benny Carter. And, of course, the great trumpet virtuoso Louis Armstrong. When they were in France, they would sit in with Django's group, and I think some of that stuff is recorded. I don't particularly have examples myself, but I think some of these things were recorded for the rest of time. In World War II, as I mentioned, the group was touring in England. War broke out. Django and the rest of the band went back to Paris. Stefan stayed on in England. This ended the first incarnation of the Quintet of the Hot Club of France. Back in Paris, Django hired a clarinetist called Hubert Rostang. He was the other lead instrument, so he essentially played in lieu of the violin that Grappelli had played prior to the war. After the war, I should mention that somehow Django survived the dark days of the Nazi occupation because jazz was banned under Hitler. So fortunately, Django knew a Luftwaffe official who kind of snuck him around and let him play live gigs. He didn't come down heavy on him. He allowed the group to play because he really loved jazz and admired Django so much. So they got through playing through the war years, which was really a dicey time. A lot of gypsies were, of course, sent to concentration camps, and it was pretty black times for anybody in France at that point, I'm sure. After the war, Grappelli rejoined the group, and away they went again, touring throughout Europe and France. I think it was in 1946, Django spent some time in North America. He toured and played with the great Duke Ellington Orchestra. And I think he was there for a little under 2 years. My notes say in 1948 he returned, but I think he went to the States late 46 and came back in early 48. So it wasn't totally a two-year period. But when he returned to France, he had played electric guitars in North America and played a lot of electric guitar for the remainder of his career. So from 48 to, he retired from playing music professionally in 1951. For those 3 years, he left the McAferry guitars behind and played electric guitars. The first example I'd like to play, it's one of the most covered tunes of the Reinhardt compositions. It's called Minor Swing. This version that I'm going to play was taken from a retrospective, a collection of Django's music that covers 1934 to 1940.
It was first recorded by his group in 1937 and reprised about four times throughout his career. So this was a very popular song. The tune begins with the lead guitar and violin taking the melody in unison, which means they're both playing the same line. And then the bass comes in, inviting the rhythm guitarist to kick in. And then we hear the really amazingly innovative style of soloing that Django was able to develop. And this is a perfect example of La Pompe, the pump that I talked about that propels this music so well. So Jim, if you could play track number one, this is Minor Swing. Thanks, Jim. So that's an example of the quintet. You hear the two rhythm guitars going and Django soloing on top. It's very effective and remains extremely popular to this day, this particular style. The second example I'd like to play is kind of in a different vein. It's a really beautiful ballad that Django wrote called Nuage or Clouds. He recorded at least 13 times, I read in my research, so you could tell this was a very favorite number of his. This version is taken from a retrospective covering 1940 to 1947, so this was, we're getting into the middle and late period of his career, played here by his quintet. After a brief intro, the track begins with Grappelli stating the melody, and then backed by bass and guitars. And as the, I'm not sure if we'll get this far, but as the tune kind of fades out, Django is taking a solo. So this song is known as an instrumental, but during the years, there was also lyrics in both French and English added to this song. I happen to enjoy the instrumental the best, so that's what I've chosen to play for you tonight. So if you could run track number two, please, Jim. This is Nuage. Such a beautiful melody. This style of violin playing, jazz violin playing, is probably the most imitated in jazz. There are a wealth of violinists who have played a lot of attention listening to Grappelli's music, and you can see why. It's just such a sweet sound, such a beautiful sound. To illustrate some of the more modern renditions of this style, I chose some more current recordings. This first one is an example of a swing standard called I'll See You in My Dreams. This was a very popular tune that was written initially in 1924. The quintet recorded this in the 30s, and it was later covered by a lot of guitarists, including the great Chet Atkins and Merle Travis. It's a very well-known tune. This particular recording is from a fantastically entertaining Woody Allen comedy called Sweet and Low Down. It's from 1999, and I would highly recommend this show to anyone if you haven't seen it. Even if you have seen it, see it again, because it's so wonderfully done. The film tells the story of a fictional gypsy jazz guitarist called Emmett Ray, played to perfection by Sean Penn. The music for this movie was arranged by composer and pianist Dick Hyman, and it features the amazing, wonderful playing of Howard Alden, who's a guitar player that lives in New York. Alden coached Sean Penn in the movie so that it looked like he was actually playing, but all the music in the movie is played by the guitar player we're going to hear right now called Howard Alden. This is I'll See You in My Dreams. Number 3, Jim. So this is a perfect example of the idea of taking an American standard and converting it to this particular gypsy jazz style. I just think that's such a beautiful piece. The next one I'd like to play is this is taken from a traditional gypsy tune that Django adapted to his style. It's called Les Yeux Noirs, or Dark Eyes. And this particular recording was made by a guitar virtuoso called Borelli Legrand. Borelli Legrand is probably one of the most famous current players in this gypsy jazz style. He was born in Alsace in 1966. He's from a very musical family. He just started playing as a child. He didn't really understand much about it, but later in his life, he went to a guitar teacher to kind of teach him some stuff, and the guitar teacher said, "Man, you've got it all. I can't tell you anything." So he just said, "Okay, fine," and went on about his business. I think it was in 1980 that he made his first recording, so he was 13 or 14 years old. He was really so gifted. He was seen as the second coming of Django Reinhardt. He was really a prodigy. He was just a phenomenal player, incredible facility. For some years, played in the gypsy style, and then kind of wandered away and played more electric jazz. He played for a time with the famous jazz bass player Jaco Pastorius. So, and then I think it was in 2001, if I have that correct, that he came back to the fold, as they say, and released an album called The Gypsy Project. This recording found him returning to the Reinhardt style and the classic jazz songbook. So since that time, he's released quite a few gypsy projects. This recording I've got today was Gypsy Project and Friends that was released in 2002, and he's had several since. He's just an amazing player. This particular recording, there's four guitarists listed on the album, but it doesn't articulate who played what. So you can hear that there's a couple other guitars doubling up with Borelli on this track. I just can't identify who the players are. But if you do have an interest in this, just search YouTube, Dark Eyes, and you'll see several examples of a whole raft of four or five guitar players playing, trading solos on this particular tune. So, Jim, this one's really loud. For some reason, I got this one a bit hot, so we should probably turn her down a bit. This is Les Yeux Noirs. So you hear all the time this pump going. It's just driving things forward, even on a blistering fast tune like that. It's just remarkable how that propels the music. The next one I'd like to play is kind of an interesting piece. It's called Bossa Dorado. Dorado Schmidt is himself an excellent gypsy jazz guitarist. He's had a problematic life. He had different physical ailments and things that he came back from and regained his facility. An amazing player. He wrote this song, and I'd like to play this because it kind of represents how this style can be adapted to different rhythms. So in this particular instance, it's a gypsy jazz version of a bossa nova rhythm. This recording is from the Best of the Rosenberg Trio collection, released in 2002. The Rosenberg Trio are two brothers. Guitarist is Stocklo Rosenberg, and his brother is Nani. He's the bass player in the group, and they play with their cousin called Nushe Rosenberg. They came from a very musical family in the Dutch gypsy community. Stocklo's father was a guitarist, and these guys started playing as kids and have really done very well for themselves. They play in festivals dedicated to this music all over the world. This is an example of Bossa Dorado. So that's kind of an example of gypsy jazz going south, going to Brazil in that instance. I think it's incredible that the trio has such a full sound. You hear the pump, and it's just one rhythm guitarist in that instance. Check them out, Rosenberg Trio. They're just incredible. The popularity of gypsy jazz has really grown through the years. I tried to research Django festivals, and there are just so many, it was impossible to figure it all out. There's a huge one down in California, and there are many, many through Europe. And some of these players that I've mentioned, certainly Borelli Legrand and Schmidt and the Rosenbergs, will travel through the world playing this music. I'm not sure if any of you folks caught the Lost Fingers that played at the Art Center last year. They're a Quebec group, Lost Fingers, from Django's Deformed Hand, but they were incredible purveyors of this style, playing 80s pop tunes and rock tunes. So it sounds unlikely, but they did a great job of bringing Rush tunes, for instance, to this style. It was a wonderful night. The last couple of years, Music Yukon has brought up a guitarist from Vancouver called Don Ogilvie, and he's done workshops teaching local players about this style. He's an expert in the area. He has traveled to Europe several times to learn directly from the source, and I sure hope he comes back. Generally, January is when he's in town. If you have a chance to see him play or have a lesson with him, you'll really enjoy it. He's a phenomenal player. I'd like to thank my friend Renald Jovan for helping me find some of this music and pick some selections. So thanks very much, Renald. That's it for my overview of Gypsy Jazz. Thanks very much.
You have been listening to the fifth installment of Jazz Vignettes from the Hall, titled Gypsy Jazz. We recorded this episode in September of 2011. To keep you in the mood, have a listen to what is now a jazz standard, There Will Never Be Another You, performed by the Rosenberg Trio. This song was originally written by Harry Warren and Mack Gordon for the 20th Century Fox musical Iceland in 1942. This program was made possible by Jazz Yukon. Jazz Yukon is a volunteer organization that promotes and presents jazz in the Yukon through an annual integrated program of live jazz presentations and jazz education outreach. This episode was researched, written, and presented live by Steve Gedrose. Live recording by Jim Holland. Dieter Gade is our producer, and I am Fawn Fritzen. Thank you for listening.